Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and welcome to your Wednesday. So glad you are joining me this morning. I'm here with Rebecca Maxwell and Paul Perreault, the morning team, and we are off to a really good start. I've been thinking about, I went to bed last night, dwelling on Romans 12:12, thinking about it, meditating on it, going it over in my head time and time and time again, and I woke up thinking the same thing. So I want to start with that this morning. Romans 12:12 says, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. Let me say that again. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. So that's what I was thinking about last night, and I would take each phrase, be joyful in hope, and I would think about the hope I have in Christ, and I would just be joyful about it because God has given me his son Jesus, and I have the confidence of my assurance in his heavenly kingdom because of what Christ did on the cross for me. And then the next one was a little bit tougher when it comes to being patient in affliction, because when affliction arises, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, being patient is sometimes the very hardest thing to do because a little anxiety can creep in, a little bit of I need an answer now sort of thing, and I don't know what the outcome's going to be, so it's real hard to be patient. So that usually causes a little bit more concern. But faithful in prayer is a great marching order, is regardless of the affliction that you're dealing with, if you can be faithful in prayer and take all of your concerns to God, cast all of your care on him, and his will be done. We got a great morning coming up. Laura Mullican is on our studio line already. She's from Source, Minnesota. They have been chosen as the anti-trafficking Super Bowl victim resource coordinator. So we're excited about getting an update from her as we approach Super Bowl Sunday, just a couple weeks away now. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute with Laura Mullican. Thanks for tuning in to the Early Morning Late Show. Bill Arnold here with you today, and I have on our studio line Laura Mullican from Source, Minnesota. Source has been selected as the Super Bowl Victim Resource Coordinator, and so through urban outreach and anti-trafficking efforts, Source empowers the at-risk and unreached to make a break from the past and hopefully build foundations for the future. And we've got the Super Bowl just around the corner, February 4th, I believe, and I know efforts are quite ramped up trying to get ready for that big event. Laura, good morning.
Good morning. We're actually 25 days away from the Super Bowl, Bill.
Well, thank you for being specific. Because I know you know that because of all the programs and campaigns and all the events you have coming up. Maybe you just give us an update about what's happening.
Yes. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be with you this morning via phone. We are, as you mentioned, named by local law enforcement as the Super Bowl Victim Response Coordinators this year, and we will be working together with agencies and nonprofits from across the Twin Cities metro area to actually come alongside of law enforcement as they recover women who are picked up in law enforcement operations over that 10-day period surrounding the Super Bowl. And we are partnering with local churches to help provide local emergency beds, which there currently are no, outside of domestic violence shelters, there really are no emergency beds available for women currently. So they just don't have that option of someplace to go. So we're going to be working together to do that, as well as providing a drop-in space for them. As we know, February can be a little bit chilly. So those coming, especially being brought here by traffickers from out of town,
mm-hmm.
are probably not going to be prepared for the cold. And, you know, if they get kicked out of the hotel that they're working in and have no place to go, we hope to provide that temporary shelter and get them connected with services or get them back to a safe place, maybe provide them a bus ticket, as well as hot meals, some hospitality, a safe place to rest. They're always tired. They're always hungry.
Mm. Laura, that's just heartbreaking to think that there's going to be so many women coming into the city of Minneapolis for the express purpose of selling their bodies during the Super Bowl week. This, I think, roughly about 10 days of activities that are going to happen. But the Super Bowl weekend, I'm sure, is going to be an absolute madhouse of evil, isn't it?
It is. And as you also know, Bill, it's a sad truth that it is happening every day, all day, right now.
Mm-hmm.
There will be an uptick, certainly, because anytime we have large groups of men traveling apart from the women that they are accountable to in their life, we see an uptick. So even when the Ryder Cup came into town this past summer, we saw our numbers rise in the number of ads being posted online, for example. But really, every day, all day, we know that there are women who are being sold against their will for someone else's pleasure, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
So we are building everything that we're doing at Source has been built for the Super Bowl and beyond. This is clearly generated a lot of interest in our state here, but we're trying to capitalize on that to bring awareness to the fact that it is an everyday problem that needs to be addressed beyond the Super Bowl as well.
Laura,
so all of our teams are actually going to be continuing beyond Super Bowl to outreach to women who are being sold online, outreach to men who are purchasing online. We have a restoration home that will continue that has been up and running for over 5 years now that serves survivors of sex trafficking.
Laura, maybe you would give us a description of what it's like when a woman gets picked up in a prostitution arrest and then somehow Source Minnesota gets a hold of her. And what is it like when you come in contact with this woman? Is she broken? Is she angry? Is she not wanting to be around you? Is she receiving your hospitality? What is that like?
All of the above. we really, just like you and I are unique individuals, every woman has a different story. There are lots of overlapping commonalities. But we find more often than not, as we have an opportunity to sit down as an individual, when those women are recovered out of some kind of an operation by law enforcement in Minnesota, most often, unless there are other charges related to drugs, weapons, other kinds of outstanding warrants, perhaps the trafficker, the seller, and the buyer, what we commonly refer to as the John, are the ones that the law enforcement are actually targeting and bringing into custody more often. And the women then are released on their own recognizance.
Mm-hmm.
So we provide that bridge that offers them hope of a different way out. We are not about snatching them out of their situation. It's really offering them hope and help and resources.
Mm-hmm.
So we might sit down and, for example, this past year, one of the recovery operations took place and we had five women that we met with down at City Hall that morning. And one of the women had an untreated broken arm. She had been thrown through a plate glass window 3 days before and had received no medical attention. And so we were able to sit with her, discover that was her situation, and bring her to the emergency room. Another of those women was fairly hostile, and that's totally okay. I don't sit well with strangers always either myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had another one who needed detox, and so I called around and found a bed that we could take her to a local facility. She went through the detox program, and after she completed it, she reached back out to me on my phone and said, you know, I am through detox. I really don't want to go back to the house where I was being held. And is there any way you can help me? And so we ended up scraping together funds, and we bought her a bus ticket back to another state out west where she would be experiencing safety. All four of the five women were open to receiving prayer. And just being able to share with them we have lots of local programs and county assistance, state assistance, some really good nonprofits that work locally. And so we were able to share with them resources that they might need. Give them a bus ticket, you know.
I
think that might be the only thing when your trafficker is finally behind bars for a short time, to think that a bus ticket might be preventing you from escaping.
Yes.
That's a really sad state of affairs. And so we just step in and prayerfully plant seeds, saying, you know what, we value you as you are. We already see that divine spark within you.
Mm-hmm.
You are valuable. You are loved just as you are.
For the love of Jesus in action.
Yeah. So it's not so much, it's different than people think, because you think, oh, you're going to rescue them and they're going to be saved today and they're going to be happy. But the truth is, it's a long process.
Yeah, it is. Laura, let me take a break. When we come back, we'll resume our conversation, and maybe we can find out how we can participate either through prayer, or maybe there's a place we could support financially. And maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the Purple Light project. We'll be back in a minute with Laura Mulliken. It is 17 minutes after the hour.
All I do is praise your name, from the rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God.
Good morning. It's 19 minutes after the hour as we're getting our Wednesday started. We're thinking a little bit about the big Super Bowl event coming up in Minneapolis, February 4th. But leading up to that is going to be a lot of other activity. And along with that usually comes some bad activity, mostly exclusively done, seems, by men who seek out prostitution and leaving a whole bunch of victims broken and with nowhere to go. And it's just an ugly deal. But Laura Mulliken from Source Minnesota is on the front line of helping that be different and a different experience for the ones who are coming out of it or trying to get out of it. And Laura, I was curious. I think last time we spoke, there was a program, and it was a very bold ministry where men were trying to come alongside the Johns seeking women and actually trying to reach out to them in a first step. Would you talk about that again?
Yes, we have online outreach teams, both to women who are being sold online, and we have a newer team that is still being formed. But we work in coordination with local law enforcement to actually identify men who are posting online to purchase sex.
Okay.
And we don't share very many details publicly, obviously.
Of course.
But we have a group of men who meet together, and they prayerfully, everything that we do is bathed in prayer, and they gather together in prayer, and then in conjunction with local law enforcement, they actually identify men who are purchasing sex online and then reach out to them. And via their phones, because you have to use your phone to connect with the date, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we reach out to those men and begin conversations. And many of the men who are on those teams have experienced victory over that particular darkness in their own lives, or they simply are really passionate about reaching out to men and talking about the truth of, you know what, we need to make better, healthier choices and to begin to identify these women and children or boys that they are purchasing as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Often you have to dehumanize someone in order to purchase them for your own pleasure
mm-hmm.
for a period of time. And so to begin to restore the humanity in their eyes of
yeah.
the people that they're purchasing. So those can be painful conversations. They can be really life-giving conversations, honestly, sometimes, because sometimes when we're caught in darkness, we're almost hoping that somebody catches up us because we can't seem to stop or control that sin ourselves. And so for us to be able to reach in and break that cycle can be a really true gift sometimes. Again, you know, not everybody is happy to receive that phone call, but others, it's almost a sense of relief that finally I have a way off of this crazy train
yeah.
that I'm on.
That is a bold ministry. Okay.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the Purple Light Project.
Yes, the Purple Light Project is something that we started at Source Minnesota. It was the brainchild of our director, Peter Wooler, and he wanted to build something that would not only serve women and build awareness around sex trafficking for the week of the Super Bowl, but really for beyond the Super Bowl. So we have been we have a Purple Light campaign fund that we have been collecting money into this past year. And that has been used to increase our outreach, but it's also been used to train individuals from across the Twin Cities to actually learn more about what it takes to serve women who are in the light without re-traumatizing them.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been doing training. We are hoping to have enough in that fund to actually continue new outreach efforts, perhaps a Celebrate Recovery kind of group
mm-hmm.
for women, because not everyone needs a residence, but they do need support services. And you may be familiar with Celebrate Recovery.
It's a
Christian recovery program.
Mm-hmm.
And so it addresses habits, hooks, and hang-ups, right? So
right.
we all have those. But those supportive services for women who have come out of the life, because they need relationships that are healthy in order to continue not returning to the life, because it's such fast money. They really have been convinced by so many people that they're not worth anything else, or that they have no other real skills or talents. And so that provides us an opportunity to come alongside of them and, again, affirm their value and the possibilities that there are in
mm-hmm.
Christ.
Laura, is there something I can do if I'm just at my church and I'm thinking, and I live in Sioux Falls, and I think I want to do something like this? How could I get the resources and some of the training and education to do this in my own church?
Oh, yes, we do have something called Sex Trafficking in the Midwest Seminar that we take to churches, and we coordinate that with local law enforcement that's local to the area that we're going to speak, and we kind of just bring a real picture of what trafficking looks like in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, for example, and that is a great educational opportunity for churches. So we always are available for those kinds of programs
mm-hmm.
and things for equipping. And then when they're farther distant like that, we tend to try to connect them with local resources
okay.
for law enforcement for them. But for the Super Bowl week itself, we've been equipping people not only for our outreach teams, which will continue beyond the Super Bowl, and our victim response teams. But we have been trained. We've trained over 200 people now for serving the week of the Super Bowl. It's a six-hour training, and we have one left this coming Saturday on January 13th from 8:30 to 3:30 at Hope Community Church in downtown Minneapolis. And that's a free training that we provide that's 6 hours that looks at kind of the reality of sex trafficking,
mm-hmm.
but it also looks at the heart and mind of what it takes as a Christian to come alongside of these adult women that we serve and not re-traumatize them, but to offer them hope and what it takes to actually stay in the work.
Mm-hmm.
When we carry other people's stories of great pain, we need to do our own work with Jesus.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Because broken people hurt broken people.
Indeed.
You know? So,
yeah. So yeah. Laura, I'll send our listeners to sourceminnesota.org for more information, even if they want to hear more information about the training on Saturday. Thank you so much. We'll be continuing to pray for the Super Bowl and all of your initiatives coming up.
Thank you so
much.
You bet.
Have a great day, Laura.
You too. Yep. Bye-bye.
A couple minutes before the half hour, we'll take a short break and be back in just a minute. Never like interrupting banjo music. It is half past the hour, though. Matthew Sorens is coming up next from World Relief. We're going to talk to him 20 minutes until the top of the hour. But now, let's go to news.
How did you find Faith Radio? And how is God using it in your life?
I have just chosen to have it playing no matter what. And I found that friends that are riding in my vehicle or my parents, that they are just encouraged by it too, and it sets a good example. I cannot imagine listening to anything else. It has truly, truly been a blessing.
Share your Faith Radio story quickly and easily on the Faith Line, 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH.
Good morning, 25 minutes until the very top of the hour. Owen Strawn is a professor and author. He talks about going from fear to faith. He says it's tempting to withdraw and wait for God to come to us when we're struggling. He points out, though, that we're called to pursue God even more in those moments.
So many people just live their life out of fear. They live their life in bitterness beyond fear. And life is not about positive change. Life is not about growth. It's about simply existing and getting by. And too many of us find ourselves in that trap, even as believers. Jesus is trying to dislodge us from our stasis. Jesus wants us to be on the move. When Jesus comes to his earliest disciples, for example, in John 1, he walks up to them and he says, "Follow me." I mean, that's how John records the call. Jesus doesn't lay out, you know, some sort of theology of what he's about to do. He doesn't walk them through his plans. He doesn't give them a map, a travelogue. He says, "Follow me." And he expects them to follow. I picture Jesus saying that, not simply in speaking in a kind of monotone, you know, it's sort of boring offer. I picture Jesus with some fire in his eyes when he comes to those first bewildered men and calls them to follow him. And I think Jesus comes to you and me and to everybody listening with that same fire in his eyes, and he calls us on this grand adventure we call Christian faith.
Just amazing to think that the disciples would actually look into the eyes of Jesus. How awesome would that be? I would think whatever those eyes would say to me, I would want to obey, but do I do that today? There's a good question. All right, if you want to hear Owen's full interview, Owen Strawn, go to myfaithradio.com, type in Life, Adventures, and God, and you will get there. We'll take a short break, and then when we come back, Matthew Sorens is with us from World Relief.
In order to be a leader, it's important that there are those willing to follow. This is Jim Garlow. In this election year, I have no doubt that many hopeful leaders will lose their following because when people get close up, they discover there wasn't so much to follow there in the first place. Being a leader in any arena isn't merely doing, it's being. The kind of leader who speaks out of the overflow of his or her life. The kind of leader who speaks to values, biblical values. Critics say it was never the intent of our founding fathers to bring the Bible into national issues. I beg to differ. For those today who perpetuate the myth that there's no place for God and the Bible in national issues, they've got a lot of history to deny. This is Jim Garlow. Live out your faith in true leadership. There's more at jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith.
We are back. It is 21 minutes until the top of the hour. Matthew Sorens is serves as the U.S. Director of Church Mobilization at World Relief and has co-authored the book Seeking Refuge on the Shores of the Global Refugee Crisis. Despite that extremely important and busy title, he still sleeps a solid 8 hours a week. Good morning, Matthew. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me back.
You, my friend, are a busy guy.
Yeah, it's been a busy season for sure, especially for churches and for World Relief that are concerned about refugees and immigration issues.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about that. Let's start with just an update on the refugee crisis, because here we are 2018, and what do we know today that is new and different from the last time we talked?
Yeah, I mean, I would say at a global level, unfortunately, not much has changed. I mean, there still are more refugees in the world today than there has been at any other point in history. I don't know if the numbers have ticked slightly up or slightly down in the last few months, but they're essentially unchanged. So somewhere around 22.5 million refugees in the world, individuals who've been forced to flee their countries because of persecution for particular reasons. What has changed a lot in the last year is the United States' response to that refugee crisis. So most notably, there's just very few refugees arriving right now into the United States relative to what would be a historical norm in the last few decades.
Mm-hmm.
So this quarter, beginning October 1st, there's been only about 5,000 refugees admitted to the United States in the first 3 months of the federal government's fiscal year. So that's if that pace continues, and we hope it will tick up, but we don't really know, if that pace continues, it will be the lowest year of refugee arrivals since the refugee program began in 1980, lower even than in 2002, right after 9/11, when understandably there were some new security vetting processes put into place that slowed the process down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, we're not even on track to hit that level of 2002. For comparison, if you go back to like 1980 or 1981 under President Reagan, there was, you know, roughly 200,000 refugees coming in the year. Now we might be on track for a little bit over 20,000 if things don't change.
Oh, that's quite a significant difference. Well, let's talk about how the how we in America respond, how the church responds to the incoming refugees, because it must be so horribly disturbing to be displaced from your country, to be rooted up and have to be leaving with your family and your belongings, and then all of a sudden you end up in a new country and you don't know anything. So what kind of response are we offering as the church?
Yeah, well, that's really the heart of our mission at World Relief, is to empower the church. And we do that through offices around the country and through affiliates like Arrive Ministries and others. Basically, our role is, you know, we don't control the process of who comes in. And you know, the government does the vetting, does the selection process. But our role starts the moment that family arrives at the airport. And actually a little bit before that, because we've helped to set up an apartment. We've worked with a team from a local church to identify an apartment, to make sure there's even a meal ready when they arrive.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll show up there at the airport, usually at this time of year, certainly with coats in addition to whatever else is necessary, because most people are not coming from climates where they're used to cold weather. And our job and the church's job, stand behind them, is to support the churches in welcoming those families and really befriending them, helping them feel as comfortable as possible. Because as you said, it's while they're so grateful to be safe in the United States, it's also very disorienting to start a new life in a new culture with a new language, with all sorts of, you know, things that need to happen right when you arrive. You need to get all the legal paperwork figured out. Your kids have to get into school. Parents need to find a job quite quickly. The way the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program works, they're expected to be into a job within 90 days and really economically self-sufficient, providing for their own rent. There's not a lot of time, so it's a pretty quick pace at the beginning. And again, that's affecting fewer people right now than it used to, but there are still people coming in, and we still need, we still rely really heavily on church teams to help with that process.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also are, in some ways, having to shift our ministry model because of the low number of new arrivals to say, how can we help the church also stand alongside people who may have been here for a little bit longer, or maybe alongside immigrants who didn't come through the refugee program but have some of the same cultural adjustment needs? Because ultimately, the biblical passages that command us to show hospitality, literally to love the stranger, those would apply to any sort of foreigner in the land.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, paint me a picture. You're at the airport. You've got a winter coat for a family coming off a flight. Is there instantly a language barrier?
Well, we do the best we can, and we're usually able to do this to have a translator available from World Relief for someone whom we've contracted, or it's often somebody who's been resettled a few years ago who's learned English in the time being. So there's, you know, of course, we deal with people from many different countries of origin, so sometimes mm-hmm. it's difficult to find, you know, if it's a language that we're used to dealing with, it's fairly easy to find a translator. Occasionally we'll have someone come who's from a country that we've never had anyone from before, and it might be more challenging. But we do our very best to have that translator available at the airport and have somebody on call, especially for those first few days and weeks. But, you know, in this country, people speak English, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on people to learn the language just simply out of practicality. There's not going to be a translator available all the time. But we do want people, especially at that first moment of arrival, to feel as comfortable as possible. So we want to help communicate to them the best we can what's going on, help them even just to introduce ourselves to them, because they may have been told, you know, someone's going to meet you at the airport, but they may not know exactly what's going on. So that's we want to do the very best we can to make them comfortable.
Mm-hmm. I know what it's like when I come off a flight. I'm usually kind of groggy and a little disoriented. I can only imagine what it would be like to be a little groggy and disoriented and be in a new city, new country.
And if you think about it, these are usually – they've been on planes for the last 24 to 48 hours in most cases.
Yeah.
This is not a flight across the United States.
No.
And then you add, you know, you go through immigration, which can be a little bit intimidating. And, and everything is new. I travel, you know, quite a bit just for my job. And I'll see people in the airport with these little bags. They say IOM on them. It's the International Organization for Migration. And they're the ones who coordinate transportation for refugees in collaboration with the U.S. government. And whenever I see those people, if I don't stop and just, you know, smile, I will at least smile. Sometimes I might just say, hi, welcome to the United States, or nothing else. I say a prayer as I walk by, because I know that that family, that individual, is at a really momentous point starting a new life.
Oh, that's really a beautiful thought. Matthew, let me take a break. When I come back, I want to hear a little bit about your own heart, how you ended up with such a passion and love for the refugees. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Let me take a little break. And when I come back, more with Matthew Sorens from World Relief in just a minute. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. We're back with Matthew Sorens. We're having a very interesting conversation about refugees and how their numbers are way down, but we still have a great need to reach out to them, serve them in love with Jesus. And Matthew, tell me about your passion for wanting to do this. Where did this come from? I assume God.
Yeah, you know, I was a senior in college down at Wheaton College in Illinois, and a classmate of mine made an announcement in class one day that she was volunteering with World Relief locally to welcome this family of refugees from Rwanda. And they had four daughters and one son. And she said, you know, I really connected well with this family, but I feel like the son, who was, I think, 12 at the time, would really benefit from a male mentor. And I thought to myself, you know, I am accused of behaving like a 12-year-old sometimes. I might be really good at that. So I signed up and basically just would go once a week to visit this family with my friend most of the time to start. And they just became, you know, I went there to help. I wanted to be helpful. And in the end, they became such close friends to me. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know how helpful I actually was, but to the point that when I graduated from college, you know, like every college graduate, I needed to find a place to live. So I moved into an apartment in their apartment complex, where I actually had refugee neighbors from about 20 different countries of origin. It was a neighborhood where World Relief has been resettling a lot of families. And those people, you know, became my neighbors, became my friends. And then I started working at World Relief about the same time. So I got to serve some of them through my work as well and connecting them with churches. So this is a very personal issue for me. And I also know that, you know, even as we think about a lot fewer refugees coming in, that weighs on my heart, because so many of the people who are currently in the queue who thought they'd be coming in this year but are not coming are actually family members of people who are already here.
Interesting.
So I've been getting text messages and phone calls from friends saying, hey, can you find any update on the status of my family back in, you know, who fled Iran, but they're waiting to get in. This young man who's a Christian from Iran, is a good friend of mine, and I don't have an answer for him. I can't tell him when policies might change or when the processing might speed up. So we're praying and we're hoping that, you know, something might change. But in the meantime, doing the best we can, both to serve people who are already here and also to remember that there's ways we can empower the church in other parts of the world to respond to the refugee crisis at a global level as well. And that's something we're really passionate about at World Relief.
Yeah. Matthew, isn't it interesting that no details in God's economy are inconsequential? You're just in class one day and this woman gets up to make an announcement and you figured, hey, I can do that. And look at how it shaped your career, you know, to this point in your ministry.
You know, I was not planning at that point in my life that I'm going to work with refugees and immigrants for my career. And that was 12, 13 years ago now. And I'm so grateful for the work that I get to do, grateful, you know, to be at World Relief, and especially grateful for the way I've been able to see in the church really step in and lean into welcoming refugees and other immigrants. That, you know, I think especially in the past decade or so, there's really been an awakening in some ways in a lot of churches to realize, well, this is an issue that's close to God's heart. We have a biblical mandate here. It's part of the Great Commandment to love our neighbors as ourselves. There's opportunities for the Great Commission to make disciples of all nations. And we need to lean forward and do this. And of course, that's not every Christian who's, you know, who's at their particular calling, but I've just been so blessed to walk alongside of so many different churches that are welcoming refugees in really, really sacrificial, really remarkable ways. And more often than not, finding it blesses them more than anything they can give.
Mm-hmm. Now, Matthew, this one family that you started with from Rwanda, have they been able to become U.S. citizens?
Yeah, they're all citizens now. Several of them, well, one's still in college. Several have actually graduated from college. One graduated from Wheaton, or is graduating.
Wow.
I think graduated last year, if I'm not mistaken, another from Notre Dame. So they, I mean, that's exceptional. I wouldn't say that happens to every refugee family. It's just a really sharp family, and their parents actually own a business now, basically a taxi business. So I'm still in touch with them. It's been fun to, you know, I probably see them every 6 months or so. We've moved a little bit away from where they are, but they're doing really well. And that's, you know, I don't want to say that's a typical story, but it is quite typical that refugees, you know, if you look at them 10 years after arrival, they're usually doing really well. Mm-hmm. They've integrated into the community. They're part of the economy. Their kids are, you know, more American usually than the parents are, at least on a cultural level, although usually everybody has become a citizen by that point. But it's a success story. I mean, we have generations of refugee arrivals going back, well, really throughout American history, but in the current form since the Vietnamese arrivals in the 70s. And at any one of those groups you look at, you give them a few years to adjust and to integrate in, and with the help of local communities and churches coming alongside them, people do really well and end up contributing back in so many ways beyond what, you know, any sort of assistance they might receive up front.
Matthew, isn't that just sort of the way God works, where you're sitting in class one day going, hey, I can go help that family, and then it turns around that the family helps you?
Absolutely. I think God has much bigger purposes in his mind than we can, than we can conceive of.
Yeah. Is there one thing in particular that jumps into your mind when I ask this question? What is the one thing that you learned from this family? I mean, they came from such a radically different place in the world. And was there a tradition or some cultural norm that they brought to America that you were able to learn from or embrace, or it changed your life in a way?
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind, and there probably are many, and they're a Christian family. They're, you know, deeply committed to Jesus, and I think that's related to this. But one thing that I observed really, you know, maybe a year or two after they arrived, they were my neighbors. There was another young man who arrived from their country on a student visa, actually, so not as a refugee, but just he's studying. And they basically heard through a friend of a friend, they didn't know this guy well, that he needed a, you know, he needed a place to stay while paying his way through graduate school and actually not able to work because of the way student visas work. And they just invited him to move into their apartment. So they have their, you know, five kids and the two parents and this, you know, 25, 30-year-old young man living in their two-bedroom apartment. He would sleep on the couch during the day while with five kids bouncing around. But they didn't think twice about that because they knew what it was like to be in a new place and need some help. And they said, of course, come live with us. And that's something that's really challenged me and my wife as we've tried to, you know, and I wouldn't say we've done the same thing exactly, but tried to emulate that spirit of hospitality, not just to the point of, yeah, we want to welcome you to our country, but what does it look like even to welcome people into our home and into our lives?
Mm-hmm. That's it, very impressive. I find that very inspiring and humbling, honestly. Matthew, if you ever come to Minneapolis to visit, let me just say, as long as I've got a second car, you've got a place to sleep.
Well, Thank you. That's very very kind, especially in Minneapolis.
Of course.
Nice one to summer.
Of course. Thanks so much for being a guest on the show. We will continue to pray for your efforts in your ministry and your work that you do. Thank you so much for being such a shining example of Jesus' love with refugees.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
You bet, Matthew. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
All right, it's a couple minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one.
Today is the tomorrow that you promised yourself yesterday. So get it started right with the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
Special thanks to Matthew Sorens and Laura Mulliken. What a great first hour we had. Appreciate their ministries, and if you want to hear more about that, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com. Go to the Early Morning Late Show if you want to hear that podcast or send it on to a friend who might need some encouragement. It's always inspiring to hear people who open their hearts, their minds, their pocketbooks to love and serve others and to do it so unselfishly. I think we can get pretty to ourselves. I know I can. I should just speak for myself. I get kind of selfish. I don't seem to understand the gift of hospitality very well. So if we go to lunch, I'd probably pick up the tab, which would be nice, but as far as opening the doors of my home, I'm not very good at that. I don't know why. Anyway, Lord's going to probably work on my heart in that category. But we've got a great second hour coming up. Bill English is already in the green room, and he is looking at his phone, which means he's getting ready for the big show. And we've got that and David Wheaton coming up in hour two. That is straight ahead. Be back in a minute with hour two. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.